This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. So when we think of European settlement in what is now North Carolina, we typically remember the English settlers, you know, Lost Colony, John White, Virginia Dare. But the French were the first Europeans to explore our coast, at least as far as we know. And while they weren't the biggest group of immigrants, they still left a mark on our state. NC State Professor Dudley Markey noticed it on his drives from Raleigh down to the coast. He goes through towns like Fezzan, LaGrange, Peltier, Beaufort, and there they are, staring him right in the face. It piqued his curiosity, and he started digging in, uncovered enough material to publish two volumes of research about the historical and cultural connections between North Carolina and France, and he joins me now. He recently published the first volume, actually, and he joins me now to tell us more about it. Dudley, welcome. Good
Hello,
to have you.
Thank you for having me. I love your show. It's a pleasure.
I love having you on because, you know, we don't think about the French, but among Europeans, again, the first to really explore the coast. Tell us about those early explorations.
Well, the first discovery of North Carolina was by Giovanni Verrazzano, who's an Italian. He was commissioned by the French King Francis I. And the ship that Verrazzano sailed on was a French ship called La Dauphine. It sailed out of Le Havre, France, in northern France and Normandy. And he sailed up and down the North Carolina coast. There was actually a historical marker out just outside the North Carolina Aquarium on Pine Knoll Shores. And Verrazzano and the French captain, Antoine de Gonflot, and a French crew anchored off of the coast. And they sent a young Norman sailor, French sailor, to the shore to bring some gifts through a package on the shore, and he got washed ashore. And then the tribes that were there were the Tuscaroras, and they gathered the young boy up and warmed him by a fire. And the people on the ship, the crew, thought they were going to roast the boy alive, and this was the first European encounter, but they just warmed him up and sent him back to the ship, so the first encounter was a peaceful one. And they named the land that they discovered Terra Francesca, French land, and put three French flags on it. Of course, the French didn't stay around long.
Well, they did stay around long. Why not?
Well, the Spanish were, you know, had a much superior maritime fleet. Spanish actually destroyed a couple of French forts, and one in Florida and one in South Carolina. And the French had their interests more up in Canada for fur and for lumber, and down in the Caribbean for sugar, the sugar industry. And they just, Spanish and English beat them out.
But looking at French interest in this area, and particularly sort of exploring the coast, I think we should go back to the fact that an Italian, Verrazzano, is sailing for France. And this is instructive in a sense. It gives us a sense of what was going on in France at the time, King Francis I, his aspirations, and why he thought the Italians might be helpful.
Absolutely. King Francis I, this is in the 1520s, he was actually fighting wars in Italy, and he was captured and was a royal prisoner in Italy in the late 1400s. And he saw the Italians as far advanced, and much more advanced than the French were at that time. And when he was released, he was imbued with Italian culture, and he brought back with him bankers and chefs and artists. And this was really the beginning of the French Renaissance. And Francis I wanted to try to emulate the Italians. There were Italian bankers in Florence, and so they helped fund the king's explorations in Verrazzano.
And that was it mostly. When you talk about advances, it was their advances in financial sophistication, ways in which you could support these kinds of endeavors.
Absolutely.
And that was what brought the bankers in. So now he's here hoping possibly to find a connection, as many did, between the Atlantic and the Pacific and improve those trade routes to Asia. And the French Huguenots, of course, another very important group that when we talk about settlement here in this country.
Absolutely. The Huguenots came here, you know, and France suffered horrible, you know, religious persecution and religious wars in the 1500s. And the French Protestants were finally given liberty of religion in the late 1590s. In the 1600s, under everyone knows the great Sun King Louis XIV, he revoked religious freedom for the Huguenots in 1685, called the Edict of Fontainebleau. And as a result, almost 500,000 French Protestants, Huguenots, fled the country. And some of these were common people, but many of them were merchants, physicians, bankers, ministers. And France suffered this great brain drain, if you will. And many went to England, and some eventually came to Virginia and then into North Carolina. They started migrating to North Carolina probably in the 1690s. Some came to the port of Norfolk, and they made the difficult journey through the Great Dismal Swamp into the Albemarle region. Some came from Mannequin Town in Virginia, which was a French colony in the early 1700s, and came down, not in the thousands, but in the several hundreds. They weren't as predominant as the English settlers, but they were there.
And some of the first land purchases were by French individuals, and you mentioned the Great Dismal Swamp. So tell us about that and some of the first European land purchases.
Sure. You can go back and I've spent quite a bit of time scouring land deeds in various courthouses in Hertford, for example. Some of them came down the Chowan River, and there are land deeds of a gentleman, for example, named Benjamin Moulin, and this name Moulin eventually became the Mullen name. It was anglicized eventually in North Carolina, and he owned a swath of land on the Chowan. There's a 640-acre land deed of a John Fonville in Craven County in 1701, and so there. Neighbors with the English, but they're French, land deeds and parcels of land peppered throughout the region.
Did those original French settlers do what the Moulins did to Mullen? Did they assimilate and change their names, or did they move, or where are they?
Yeah, most of the French names, the French came, and with any immigrant group, the English were the dominant group, and it's where the French came along with Irish and Scotch and Welsh and some Germans. We know about in the New Bern and Baron von Graffenried colony, and after several generations, they just assimilated into the dominant population, and there are actually hundreds of French names that I've sort of traced back that go back to the original French Huguenots that came down from Mannequin Town and from Norfolk into the state.
A number of place names in French, however, remain.
Number of place names in French. Think of Beaufort or the town of Pelletier, and actually the state has dozens, maybe hundreds of names of topographical places, mountains, rivers, the French Broad River, for example, a place not far from here called Rougemont. They call it Red Top.
And Gastonia and Concord, which we don't think of actually, are rooted in French names originally.
They also are Concord for peace. And you mentioned, Faisans, but Faison is named after the Faison family. And Lagrange, in French, Lagrange, it means barn, and it was actually named after the Marquis de Lafayette's estate outside of Paris. And, of course, there are several place markers in the state with commemorating the Marquis de Lafayette. Fayetteville is named after Lafayette. They named the town after him for his service during the American Revolution.
And, of course, the lost colony associated with the British. However, it turns out there may be a lost French colony.
Right. The lost French colony, I call it in the book, I gave it the French name, La Colonie Perdue. There's a local historian, Alonzo Dill, and the term is his. And there is evidence that this group came down and settled in the area just 2 miles to the west of a place today called Lawson's Landing. You may be familiar with John Lawson's voyage to the Carolinas, and he documents in his journal, in his book, that there were his French neighbors were 2 miles to the west. And so no one's ever really, there's no physical trace of the place today. But I've sort of started exploring it, drove 2 miles west, looked at some other local archival material, and I've actually kind of located the place. I found a land deed from 1764 called Frenchtown, and that's in that place where Lawson says approximately they were. And there's some other references that the colony was where the old county bridge used to be, and that's the narrowest part of the Trent River, and there's no longer a bridge there, but you can see where the bulwarks are. And piecing together various references, that's where
you wonder about a name like Frenchtown, if that's not the name that came later once the French left, and because that seems like the name the other people give it, right? I mean, you don't call yourself Frenchtown.
No. I think it wasn't really an official name of the town. Yeah, it was just a sort of a local.
How people referred
to it later.
To
the area later after they just.
And so they really. It's a good clue.
And the people really weren't. I mean, we can say the lost colony, it's no longer there, but we do know, I can trace the names back, from land deeds and family names in the Craven precinct, back to the Virginia settlers and even back to France. And those are some of the names. And the North Carolina Huguenot Society actually has hundreds of members. And there are several dozen of people with names of descent that go back to those original settlers. So it really wasn't lost, but kind of assimilated into the dominant fabric.
Blackbeard spoke French.
Blackbeard spoke pirate in French, and the French call him La Barbe Noire. And Edward Teach, La Barbe Noire is a French term. Before Edward Teach became a pirate, he was a fairly educated man and spoke acceptable French, and he dealt a lot with sea captains and merchants. And most people don't know that the Queen Anne's Revenge was actually from a French ship originally. Yeah. Blackbeard captured it. It was called La Concorde. It was a slave ship, and he captured it, of course, gave it his new name, the Queen Anne's Revenge. And he was a treacherous pirate. He was also a very savvy entrepreneur. And when he captured the French ship, he sent most of them away, but he took with him two physicians, a couple of carpenters, the cabin boy, and a cook. And so, and we know there's a legend in Beaufort, a hammock house, that Blackbeard had a common law French wife, uh-huh. and he hung her in the oak tree in the backyard. And people say they can still hear her wailing at night sometimes in French and in English. So,
wow. Do French pirates say air? I don't know. I just French air, pirate. Mes amis. I'm
air,
sorry.
Mes amis. I'll have to look a little bit more into that in a second.
Any evidence of that? Well, you know, no recordings, certainly. No recordings exist of Blackbeard in French, sadly.
No. And, you know, like with a lot of the book, there's just very spotty information that I've had to, you know, it's taken me 5 years to kind of assimilate it into what we have today.
Is that what got you going, though, is seeing those French place names and wondering what's that all about? I mean, how did you get going on this project?
French place names and, one of my, what I research is French-American relations. I've been working on that for some years. My last book was called Contrary Affinities, the French-American Connection, kind of analyzing this kind of complex relationship between the French and Americans. And then, you know, I started seeing these places, and I said, why not hear it right in North Carolina? And so I started digging down, and there are various references by the official histories in North Carolina. And it's not like they neglected the French necessarily, but the purpose was to write, you know, the narrative of the dominant narrative of North Carolina as an English colony. But at first I was just going to write an article, and then all the stuff kept popping up, and it just sort of expanded into a book.
Were you able to find ways in which the French might have influenced the culture and the trajectory of this particular colony that then became North Carolina?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the French were, the town of Bath, for example, some of the founding members of Bath were French, and also of Beaufort. And the French that came here, they were integral members of the community. There were craftsmen and merchants, as I mentioned before, physicians and ministers. And, you know, the French Huguenot ideals are really at the heart of American American values, personal liberty, religious freedom, individual responsibility. So I think in that way they fit right in with the English, you know, colonists.
And you worked a little bit, I think, or have been working with Walt Wolfram, who's a linguistics professor at NC State, to understand some of the language. Have you found linguistic connections?
That's something I'm going to explore more in Volume 2 of just scratch the surface at this point. But there's an interesting place down in Cumberland County called Crusoe Island, and one of Walt's graduate students wrote an article on the French inflected English from that area. And in fact, Crusoe Island, it's a very isolated place. And a group of French refugees from Haiti in the Revolution of Haiti in 1804 came up the Waccamaw River. And they had French last names, and they settled there. And eventually, same thing, assimilated. So one of his students did this work on, they have a certain back vowel that is related to French. And then one of my students a few years ago started looking into it and wrote a short article on the French characteristics of English down east. Think of the expression, where did this come? I caught me beaucoup fish. You hear that quite a bit. You know, beaucoup in French is a lot. So
sure.
There are certain linguistic features that I'm going to be working more closely with Walt and in the second volume on that.
Well, we will definitely have you back for that, but I've got a few more questions
sure.
for you now. Anti-French sentiment. I mean, interestingly enough, that the American Fries comes from the representative, Walter Jones, from who represents Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us about that. So
he banned all reference. This is the invasion of Iraq in 2002 right. when the French and European Union didn't support it. And so he said, we have to ban all references to French fries, and I call them freedom fries and freedom toast.
Yeah.
You know, the French-American, French English or American sort of antipathy goes way, way back to the Norman invasion of England and then sort of the Hundred Years' War. And in more recently, North Carolina, the French and Indian War, you know, the North Carolina militia, they were fighting alongside the British against the French. But then, you know, American and French revolutions, there's a book called Sister Revolutions. So American and French have been sort of joined at the hip, really, in so many ways. And so this is sort of this kind of a love-hate relationship, I think, between the French and Americans. You know, more recently, you know, the invasion of Iraq, there was sort of this little backlash in the United States. But, I mean, 30 million people go to, you know, France every year, and there's more McDonald's in France than any other country outside of the United States. So French-American relations are, you know, alive and well in that.
We call it the French and Indian War, and we know that the French didn't win that one. And the influence, the impact that had on France and French colonists in this country up north is pretty well known. Did it have much influence down here?
Well, the French, you know, the French and Indian War here in this continent was to curtail French colonial expansion.
Right.
So after that, I think French colonial expansion, you know, the French, you know, had Quebec and had Louisiana Territory. Surprisingly, there's some after French and Indian War, some of the French soldiers went back to France and went to Quebec. Some stayed here and actually became, you know, lived here.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see the great, you know, much of an influx after the French Indian War in North Carolina until the American Revolution, which then we're going to see a lot of French influence. In the second volume, I begin with a chapter on the American Revolution and the French presence here. We actually know, everyone knows about our debt to the French in the Revolution.
What were some of the surprises? Tell us a little bit about how you did your research and then some of the surprises that you found along the way.
Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting question. One of the first things that happened when I started the work, I have a colleague over in Meredith College, Brent Pitts, and he said, well, you know, you should go look at Newbern. There's a Kellenberger Library. They have some information. So I call up the gentleman, Mr. Victor Jones, and we had a phone conversation. He goes, interesting, you should call. We just found a French land deed, a land deed written in French from the 1790s. Why don't you come down and look at it? And then he's the one that taught me about the French lost colony. And so I started poking around, and I eventually ended up in Tryon Palace archives, and I found this letter of Governor Tryon. Governor Tryon was only governor here for 1 year, and I found a letter of his daughter. She was 16 years old at the time, Margaret Tryon, a letter in French to a Frenchman. And the Tryon Palace actually has quite a treasure trove of French collectibles, of French manuscripts and books and tapestries and such from the period. Of course, it's not the original materials because the palace burned down, but the reconstructed what they thought was part of Governor Tryon and Mrs. Tryon's collection. So that was really, you know, a really interesting find.
This volume and this series that you're putting together is published on Lulu. You're a tenured professor. Why did you decide to go the Lulu route?
That's a very good question. Well, you know, I've published a couple of books in academic presses. And in this particular work, it's not really an academic work. It's written for the general reading public. And so I really, you know, publishers have their own needs and, you know, initiatives. And I just really wanted, main reason is to have, you know, total freedom over the book. And the second reason, and more important one, I suppose, is that I can revise a new edition at any time, and I'm already been getting people who are starting to read the book, and they said, oh, and I can share my family history with you, and I have some genealogy, and maybe you want to add this. So I'm sort of already collecting new material, so it's easy for me to go in and revise the work and update it with the information that people are sending me.
And obviously you worked a lot with records and deeds and printed material. Was there much in the way of oral history and people telling you their family stories?
Some in oral history, especially in Beaufort. There's a woman named Emma Wilson. She wrote an article on the French Connection. She's put me in touch with some of the families there. The town of Pelletier, French is Pelletier. There's a woman, Lisa Harmon Pelletier, who her original descendant, Jerome Pelletier, came here just after the French Revolution in the 1780s, and she's a treasure trove of, you know, oral history, and has put me, you know, in touch with people in the, you know, in that area, in the Beaufort area, Carteret County. County, Carteret is also a, you know, French.
Carteret is, Carteret. I think that means a small carter.
A small carter?
Carteret.
The little one, yes.
We want to have you back, as you continue your research, because it's fascinating stuff. Dudley Markey, thank you so much for being on
the
program.
Thank you, Frank, for having me.
Dudley Markey is a professor at North Carolina State University in the Department of Foreign Languages and Literatures. His new book, available on Lulu, it's called France, and by the way, the NC in France is in uppercase, the French heritage of North Carolina. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the teen duo, yeah, they're still in their teens 2 years after we first had them on, the Bucket Brothers. Stay tuned.